Welcome to the Ivy Podcast. We're just two aunties sharing our experience through the lens of one Blackfoot woman and one Anishinaabe woman. And we are Indigenous Vision, an educational nonprofit based in Montana and Arizona. We are 100% Indigenous led, and this is our podcast. Check us out at indigenousvision.org to learn more about our work, make a donation, or play back any of our radio shows and this episode.
Hello and welcome to the Indigenous Vision Podcast. You are officially listening to episode 72. We're just a couple of aunties hanging out on the internets. My name is Melissa. I am coming to you from Las Vegas. How are you, Suta?
I'm doing good. Enjoying life. Grateful for every morning that I wake up healthier.
No kidding. It's been a good couple of weeks since we hung out. You got super sick and I'm just glad to see you like vibrant again.
Yeah, it was like a couple colds at the same time. I'm at the kitchen table today.
Oh, wow. That's a great place to record.
Yes, I like it. It's a really sunshiny room and it has windows on the north side and the east side.
Fantastic. Nice. So here we are. It's been 2 weeks since we last recorded. We're in November, which is now since 1990, Native American Heritage Month.
Yeah, I had to Google that. I was wondering where Native American Heritage Month came from. I think somewhere near the end of November is Native American Heritage Day. And I was just thinking, when did it become a month? It's kind of like Indigenous Peoples Day. When you're Indigenous, every day is Heritage Day.
Right. And I've been seeing again, like people are trying to honor us or in which ways they can do that. And again, I'm just going to reference our Indigenous Peoples Day post, just do all the things that I shared there, which were, you know, read books, learn about the history, reflect on the land, think about the land and what it's given you, support, you know, podcasts like us, learn about what we go through, learn about other shows out there that could tell you stories about the history, stories about different tribes or nations that you may have never even heard of. There's also a whole ton of Indigenous artists out there working in the music industry, working in film, working in TV, working in art design, you know, any kind of branding you can think of. We're everywhere. We're absolutely everywhere across the US. And I still get baffled every once in a while when people are like, wow, Native Americans do that when referring to like maybe a makeup line or something like that.
Yeah. I think there's a Native American owned, First Nation owned business, everything.
Absolutely.
Everything. And let's see, I moved my class, one of the class days to attending online events. Cause there's a lot of cool, I looked at Eventbrite. We have a training up on Eventbrite, our culture humility training. And I looked at some of the other events available for Native American Heritage Month and they're pretty cool. I kind of wanted to attend so many of them that I just made it a class activity to find one you're interested in, attend it and report back. And there's a film screening I'm going to in a couple of days. And it's a screening of the film Inhabited, a film that focuses on individuals, communities, and families who live within the UNESCO Natural World Heritage Sites across Canada. That seems, and those are like Indigenous people. So it's pretty interesting to me, you know, jurisdiction issues and all of that stuff. And so there's some pretty cool events on there. You should check it out. And most of them are free. Some of them are trainings, paid trainings like ours, Invest in Yourself, but most of them are free. There's the Indigenous Global Unity Summit. That seems cool. If you're into like AA, there's an Indigenous led Wellbriety 12 steps meeting. So it's like more so focusing on the Indigenous. It's a pretty cool program. Prehistory, history, and heritage of the Ohlone tribe. That sounds cool. I don't know. There's just so many events going on this month. Food classes. One food class is how to cook kusha squash, walleye, and blue corn.
Wow. That sounds like there's plenty of opportunities for anyone to jump on for free. I mean, there was a couple that I was looking at too. There's one that I'm going to attend. I think it's next week and it's online as well. Cause I am so grateful for the online communities who share knowledge through like Zoom webinars and stuff like that, because I have learned so much and I'm probably grateful that the pandemic kind of made that more available and more normalized to gather online and actually share a whole lot of like knowledge and stories. It's just really comforting now, I find, to join a webinar where there's a bunch of Indigenous people gathered and just listen. Like, it's so comforting.
Yeah. I always have especially during the winter time, a lot of people from back home start up language classes online. And I always have one of those playing during the evenings as well.
My favorite YouTube channel is the Turtle Lodge, which is an Anishinaabe channel. And there's so much wisdom that's been captured by elders who are no longer with us. And I'm just grateful that we can refer back to these platforms where they shared and told so much and spoke, you know, from the heart. And I'm just so glad that we're living in this time where people actually like record stuff like that now and upload it onto the internet in a professional, respectful way, obviously. But it's just really great because like I'm so far from my traditional territory. I'm talking like a couple few thousand miles. So when I click on to the Turtle Lodge channel, I just feel like I'm right back at home. I am connected once again with the land, even though I'm super far. And it's just, again, like a really great comfort just to hear the voices.
I know. You kind of like reminded me of a memory that I've been thinking about. And it's kind of like the inspiration for the work we do and what I feel like there's a lot of times in my life where I've went through something like kind of hard, but I've made it through miraculously and maybe not so miraculously because it was easier, I guess, for me to get through. I felt strong through whatever was going on. And it was because I have my land and my culture and all of those beings and those stories of strength and struggle and survival to fall back on. And so I feel like it almost pulls life back into a macro view of, I guess, struggle and resilience. And I always, like, I use my my inspiration for making the map and the app of like wanting to share my grandpa, because every time we drove to town, my grandpa would point out the same hill and tell the same story. And he did it like 1,000 times throughout my whole life. And I don't know if I've ever like, you know, huffed and rolled my eyes. Like I just kind of smile and say, here's the story again. But you know, that I was sharing yesterday with the author that was the beauty of Indigenous storytelling and cultural life ways and identity making and placemaking, and how our stories are not just regular stories. They're kind of like a nursery rhyme or a lullaby that you learn that you can't forget the beat and you can't forget the, you know, the cadence and the words. And you just, it's something when you learn it, you remember it for the rest of your life. And so I was telling him that my app, I wanted the slogan line for it to be an elder in your pocket, kind of like that, because you'll be driving around, right? And then you'll get a little ding when you pass that hill and you can hear that story. And yeah, I've heard the story so many times. I hear it in my grandpa's voice in my head when I pass that hill. And so it's pretty impactful to hear a story like that 1,000 times over.
It definitely does reconnect. I totally agree with that. And I find myself using that method to reconnect whenever I get a little bit too caught up in my, you know, trauma responses or a lot of the work that I'm getting into, especially with the anti-racism. I find myself getting get really worked up sometimes. And then I got to like take a couple days and just reconnect with the land and just kind of meditate on like the lineage I come from, the heritage. I actually Googled heritage because I've just been going really, really deep into everything lately. I don't know if it's just this time of the year when everything's changing and transforming, but I've been getting super, super deep, and it's actually having an effect where I have to like monitor my emotions now and control like the trauma that I'm kind of focused on a lot sometimes. But it was really great to have this positive reflection about how even though our ancestors for the past few generations, 500 years, have had it really rough, there's like this whole other history of an amazing existence on my territory, right? Like there's a lot of thriving. There's centuries and thousands of years of good living. So I really have been pulling from that part of my actual bloodline. And it's been so beneficial just to reflect in a positive way about our ancestors. I think for myself personally, anyways, I get too caught up in the colonialism. I get too caught up in the intergenerational trauma. And I have to like sit back and remind myself, wait a second, 500 years. Yeah, this happened. I'm still here. It's amazing, but I still carry all of this amazing wisdom and power from my relatives before the 500 years. And that's really what's been keeping me going for the past like 3 months, basically, as I continue to dive deeper into my healing. Because when you're uprooting the trauma in your life, it's actually just as traumatizing, or if not more sometimes. So I'm finding myself really going deep with the ancestral reflections.
Yeah, I think that's important. And I think that there could be trauma experienced on both sides. Maybe that's where the resistance comes from non-Native people wanting to learn about Indigenous history, is that a good portion of it is pretty bloody and gruesome. And, you know, the despair is palpable. You know, it changes the energy of the room when you learn about such heavy things. And no one was excluded. You know, elderly and babies faced equally violent endings in that period of time. But you're right. We have, I think, in a macro view, going back to that big picture view, over time, there's been more times of peace and abundance on this land than there has been strife and grief and struggle. Only recently, strife and grief and struggle has come in because we're living so, not to sound so too romantic, but we're living out of balance and out of that harmony. And those mutually beneficial relationships, we've got exploitative relationships happening. But I think about the times of abundance, and then you think about all of those stories of survival and all of the little miracles that were never documented. And I, like, when we do the mapping and we do our mapping work, and I talk with other mappers, I think we're all trying to focus on, well, maybe Indigenous Visions team of mappers is focusing on balancing those stories out. So we have tons and tons of stories of injustice, but we also have an untold narrative of nations that are typically told as, like, you know, there's this bloodthirsty warfare and gruesome intertribal warfare happening between the two, but it's not often talked about that there's, you know, shared words and shared ceremonies. And there's places on the land called, you know, different names, usually like important points on the land, like confluences or where meteors hit, stuff like cool stuff like that, that are played, that are something along the lines of like Peace Valley or Peace Hills or Peace Mountains, where fighting like that usually wasn't permitted. And the other narrative and stereotype that pushes against is that, you know, all the natives were just killing each other, so it's okay that we just genocided them.
Right. Some of the stereotypes that have morphed into these brutal narratives that people still vocalize and believe to this very day it's just so much. And that's why I feel like, I think I was born, and one of my purposes in life is to use my voice, like my literal voice, to kind of challenge that in a little bit. And with cultural humility and with your guidance, because you're so graceful, let's just put it out there, I try to do it in a more graceful way, so I don't come out like a crazy person, like a crazy, angry brown person. So I find myself finding these narratives because they always come across and they always pop up on my path. So I'm like, well, this is here for a reason. What can I learn from it? And what, more importantly, what can I do about it? I mean, there's so many things that I can't just scroll past. I can't just ignore. As much as I want to preserve my energy, my integrity for all the things that I'm doing in the present moment in my life, there are times when I like genuinely feel the need to speak up and say something. So I'm finding ways to like balance myself in that space when I am speaking about something that's, you know, a brutal narrative or a really ugly script that I'm seeing someone follow and promote. I find myself in a position where, one, I do have the courage now to say something in an eloquent way. At least I try to. But then again, I also self-care after that because I can't let it ruin my day. And that's what I used to do, is like I would call people out and then my entire day would be ruined, because dealing with racism has been such a brutal experience for my entire life that I would let it ruin my entire day. But now I'm getting a lot better at, you know, seeing the behaviors or the language used, calling it out and pointing it out and being like, hey, this is really not cool. And then moving on.
I know it's really important how we react to things. And then that's going back to like conflict negotiation and warfare. I think overwhelmingly Indigenous nations work to avoid warfare if they could, because people were our valued resources. And then like the makeup of the family unit and then the band and the clans and the nations and how it was all people dependent. And so every member of the camp, I believe, was a valued member of the society. And so when you lost somebody, the impacts were felt, and that's where poverty would hit you, is that contribution of that person and their abilities and their skills and just, you know, their knowledge too, that they've learned and inherited. And so that's why we have things like when I encounter that warfare narrative and that, oh, they were just killing each other, so what's the harm in us doing it for them type stuff, I always talk about, what about the concept of counting coup? Or what about traditional gaming and betting games and stickballs and basketball and football and all of these, like football has Indigenous roots. And so like all of these competitive sports, like lacrosse, lacrosse is a really good example, because those Haudenosaunee nations would meet to settle their disputes with a good game of lacrosse. And that's where their men would take their, you know, angst out and show their, you know, their pride and their bettering of one another and all of that fun stuff without actually losing a life.
Yeah. I agree. It's like a dance off, except 500 years ago.
I know. Okay. Oh, I think I can throw this ball farther than you or faster. I'll be faster, more cunning, smarter.
Or making a little wager on it. You know, I think that's where gambling comes from too. You know, a little bit of betting here and there, just teasing, nothing too crazy, but I think about that a lot too.
Yeah. And the wager could be something small, like, you know, your hunting territory or one of your best wives.
Right? Jeez.
I mean, she
play makes, for keeps.
Right? She makes really good clothes. I always say I'm a Blackfoot woman that would not go without a struggle, because I'm pretty Blackfoot proud, I suppose. I don't know if I could be any other nation's woman.
No intermarriage from a different nation for you?
Well, I love being Blackfoot. I just love being Blackfoot. So I don't know if I could be like stolen and made to be like Mandan, especially a tribe that's so different to my own comfort level, you know. And there's so much to learn about being Blackfoot. It's just, there's not enough time in life.
Isn't it crazy? Like, I feel like I've just barely touched the tip of the iceberg when it comes to my Anishinaabe learnings. I even have this huge book that I'm reading right now. Like, it's just endless. The knowledge is endless.
Mm-hmm.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
It's like reading an amazing book that never ends.
Right. It's about you.
Right. It's what everybody
this is
wants.
About your history. This is your history.
And this is what I'm talking about. This connection to the culture and the sense of pride that it gives me and the sense of love. That's the only way I can describe it. It's like a pure love. And I'm just so glad I was born who I am. Like, because I look around me and I'm like, whew, I'm so glad I'm not them, or I'm so glad I'm not that. I actually really love being an Indigenous person. I love the unique perspective that I have and that I bring to all the spaces around me. Like, I really feel special.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a couple brags like about being Blackfoot. Like, I've traveled all over the world, and I feel like some of the girls in my community are still like the most beautiful girls in the world. So there's that. beautiful Blackfoot girls worth stealing, but better not.
Right.
That's why we have self-defense. And then we also are, have a fierce reputation, but that reputation is one out of compassion and love. People don't understand it. And they it's like a boastful pride or it's a vanity, but it's a deep self-love and love for who you are and where you come from. We have origin stories in one of the only places on the world that has water flowing in every direction. That's pretty awesome. We sit at the headwaters to much of the world's water. That's beautiful.
That's so powerful. Oh my goodness.
I know. And it's just, then we also have medicine wheels, and those are older than Stonehenge and the pyramids. That's how
think about that. Yeah. Think about that. That is insane.
Mm-hmm. That's how old the knowledge I'm inheriting is. And that's a true honor. There's another one too. Well, they'll come to me, but there's a lot of cool things about being Blackfoot. Our water knowledge, our time spent in place, our physical features. We're just beautiful people. The prairie is growing good. Yeah. The prairie is growing good.
I agree. So this Native American Heritage Month, I think it's a really great start to just do some personal research. I think a lot of people could benefit and really maybe even connect with your own culture one day down the line if you haven't. Okay. So this Native American Heritage Month, we're going to do our best to not just share what it's like for us to be, two beautiful, super amazing Indigenous business women, but also what it's like to navigate, and for myself personally, speak up against a lot of these unchecked, behaviors and ways that people are going about, especially on the land. I just posted something on my Twitter about shamans. So this is kind of like a tee up for what's coming in our next episode, but I just wanted to call out people who are out there making money on the land and using quote unquote land, entities or spirits without even acknowledging the history of the land. And Phoenix and I went into this in the cultural humility episode that we just did about land and cultural humility, because she's involved in ecotherapy on the land and how she uses pretty much an Indigenous perspective to go about this work, because it's predominantly done by, Euro Westerners going on the land and using the land to heal. However, when you do it in North America, you get very little acknowledgement about the history of the land or where you're trying to actually extract the healing properties of the land itself, whether it be the water, whether it be the plants or the animal people or the rock people. People just are bypassing all of this insane knowledge that's out there and all these stories that have been around forever, and just kind of masking whatever purpose they're trying to do out there with their new age shamanism. So I kind of pointed to that on my Twitter, and I'm going to use this month as not only to keep it fluffy and light, like we pretty much did on Indigenous Peoples Day, but to get real. I want to keep the vibes real for Native American Heritage Month. And that's what I'll be doing on my personal social feeds.
Awesome. Yeah, I've been totally taking it easy, but I always teeter the fine line of burnout and productivity. So I gotta self-preserve sometimes, and dealing with our work and dealing with trauma. That's why we tried to focus on the things that also make us resilient. But I want to encourage people to really get out there and start to learn about the land around them and the people that belong to that land, or the people that were created there and have origin stories there. And then go deeper and find out your own heritage and your own roots that are beyond 150 years old, that are, beyond the Mayflower. Really find out who you are and where you come from, the soil that has helped form your DNA. And one of the things that I really love looking at in other Indigenous cultures and earth-based cultures, and then cultures that have been heavily colonized, Irish and Scottish, and is looking at their water relationships. And there's so many interesting paralleling ideas that are happening across the world when people start looking at their relationships between water and people and our culture, and then how we interact with the land and how we you know, stay safe. So there's so many cool stories out there. So our mapping project is a citizen science project. So if you are so compelled to do something more than just acknowledge or just learn, you can actually help make a difference in recording some of your city and your town's significant sites, original place names, data that's like sourced from the original people there, because right now we have a narrative that's pretty outdated being told, and a lot of it makes excuses for a genocide. We're in a pretty significant era right now where a lot of that older generation whose parents and grandparents actually were part of that, you know, that era, they're passing on. And so I just hate when knowledge is lost without documenting it or learning it or having it passed on in some way. And so, yeah, get out there and talk to your older generations and help record the information that's not written down in history books, because history books are a really sad representation of what the actual history was here on this continent.
Real vibes only. Real vibes only. Thank you so much for listening to the Indigenous Vision podcast. You can find out more about us on our official website, including how to contact us, make a donation, or play back any of our music radio shows or this podcast. Don't forget to share with your friends and write a review if you've got time. We totally appreciate you sharing your time with us.